The U.S. Supreme Court has blocked Wisconsin from implementing the voter ID law, requiring voters to present photo IDs before voting. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. In this edition of our Week in Review, our two guests from different perspectives will react to that U.S. Supreme Court decision and another one regarding same-sex marriage that came down earlier this week, and other top stories in state, national, and international news. And we welcome your questions and your reactions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our 2 Week in Review guests. Dan Kopanky is a former Republican state senator from La Crosse. He's also the owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
And John Nichols is with us. He is the associate editor of the Capital Times. He is Washington correspondent for The Nation and co-author of Dollarocracy, How the Money and Media Election Complex is Destroying America. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Go Loggers.
Thanks, John.
Hey, well, big news coming down last night. I woke up this morning and turned on my computer and learned that the U.S. Supreme Court has blocked voter ID in Wisconsin. John Nichols, what do you think of that?
Well, Joy, you got to stay up later.
I go to bed early.
We've entered into a political sphere where it's coming so fast and there are so many developments that if you go to bed at a reasonable time, you're going to miss major things. So this Supreme Court ruling is a big, big deal. And I think it's a little unexpected. There were folks who thought something might happen at the court. But remember, this week, the court essentially backed up North Carolina's voter ID. And here the Supreme Court comes with a 6-3 majority and says, no, voter ID, you can't, it apparently says, you know, it looks to be the evidence of it, can't go forward in Wisconsin, at least for this election. They did not throw it out. Right. What they said is they want to review it. Here's the big deal. This is a very big deal. And I think an incredibly important and good decision. They said, you can't create chaos before an election. You can't take a law that everybody thought wasn't going to be implemented because Judge Adelman had really knocked it down, and then suddenly in the last weeks before an election say, we're putting in a whole new set of rules, screw up how absentee ballots are done, make colleges look at doing new IDs, have clerks begging for more money. And I think that was the underpinning of the court ruling. And I have to say it's so healthy because we have a big problem in America. Not enough people vote. And the last thing you want to do in this country is make it complicated and uncertain as you head into an election. So I'm thrilled by what the court did.
Dan, what's your reaction?
Well, as they moved pretty quickly, the court did, and John said it pretty well. I think the absentee ballots were very problematic for the justices. However, they didn't rule on the legality of the law itself. They just ruled that it couldn't be put into effect in November's election. And for a lot of the reasons that John stated, Wisconsin's law was crafted after Indiana's to some respect, and I think that in the long run, Wisconsin's law will stand the test of challenges in the courts and will go into effect, but it won't be for November's election.
Well, here's a statement from Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen. He said upon this Supreme Court decision, I believe the voter ID law is constitutional and that nothing in the court's order suggests otherwise. Instead, the court may have been concerned that even with the extraordinary efforts of the clerk's absentee ballots that were distributed before the Seventh Circuit declared the law valid might not be counted. We will be exploring alternatives to address the court's concern and have voter ID on Election Day. What's going on there, John, you think?
You know, I love J.B. Van Hollen. He's a good northern Wisconsinite and you know, more power to him. But he has tried in every major election since 2008, at least, to intervene in some way to make voting more complicated. And I think that he believes, I sincerely think J.B. Van Hollen believes he's trying to enforce the law and that's what he's supposed to do. But he's just wrong on this. He is wrong to say that. And the reason he's wrong is because, you know, we are in this final cycle toward an election. We have the first major gubernatorial debate tonight. Mm-hmm. And to to throw out complexity, to make it say, oh, well, we may still have voter ID. No, the right way to do it is to say, as Dan just said, still think this law may be upheld by the courts, but, you know, let's go forward and have an election. Let's not complicate these things with trying to alter the rules and have last-minute decisions. I'm disappointed in his statement there.
Before Dan responds, Steve in Danbury is with us. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. Brad Schimmel is running on, at least partly, on this idea that the Attorney General's office should not be politicized in any way. Yet that statement from J.B. Van Hollen that you just read clearly indicates to me, and I won't be as generous as Mr. Nichols was, that he is indeed continuing to politicize the office by not looking at what the justices really said and by perpetuating the ambiguity around this whole issue, I think hoping that on Election Day voters will still be wondering what the heck is going on, do I need an ID or not? So I think Mr. Van Hollen needs to be roundly condemned for the statement you just read, Joy, and I'd like your guests to respond to that, especially your conservative guest.
Dan Kopanky?
That'd be me. I didn't see that quote, Joy, and I don't understand, you know, where that came from as far as JB is concerned, but I do agree we're a little over 3 months, 3 weeks out from an election, and we need to have as much certainty as we can going into the polls.
Mm-hmm. John?
Well, Dan, you know, look, Dan is one of those great Americans who actually has the courage to run for public office, right?
Thank you, John.
Well, there are plenty of nasty things I've said about you, Dan, so put it in the box in the right place. But Dan's one of those people who's run for public office, and he knows the reality that it may seem to the average voter like 3 weeks before an election is a lifetime. Right. But for candidates and for people who are engaged in this process, to have a moving target, to have a different set of rules in those final weeks is mind numbing. It's really not the way to do it. And because you do try to mobilize voters, you do try to get people to the polls. And if you're telling them different things, different rules, it doesn't work. And so I would say it is incumbent on Governor Walker and on J.B. Van Hollen as public officials, not candidates, but public officials, and JB, of course, is stepping down, to say, look, here's what the rules are. Here's where we're going. And I hope that everybody steps up and does that. I hope tonight in the debate that both Mary Burke and Scott Walker will say, you know, looks clear that we're not going to be doing a different election this year. We're going to do a classic Wisconsin election. Let's go for it and have a real knockdown, drag out debate, but let's not try and complicate it with uncertain or unclear rules.
Let's take another call. We have, is it Guy in Milwaukee?
It's Guy in Milwaukee. Thank you for having me and good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I'm calling because I feel like as if on both sides there's a problem because to use the ID to basically suppress, to keep people from voting, my personal opinion is as we want to win this election by all means, by no matter what we need to win, by changing all the rules at the last minute. But at the same time, I don't believe that in America we should be even discussing ID for people to vote because today, everybody should have an ID. Maybe those folks who are a little bit aging and who basically maybe didn't have birth certificate, there can be ways for them to have the ID and to vote. But to talk about these young folks who do not have ID, I just feel like it's a conversation that we shouldn't be having today, and for a party to try to use that to stay in power or to get more power, it shouldn't be because even dogs and cats today they have IDs.
All right, Guy, thanks very much. John, your response to that.
I think he gets to something that goes far deeper than this debate, and it's an important element of it. I have covered elections in 25 different countries around the world. I was just in Scotland covering their independence vote a couple weeks ago. It's a part of my brief as an author who writes about democracy. And the fact is, The United States has the weirdest, most complicated system of elections of any place I've ever been. We have different state laws. Some states, we have different laws within states. We have no consistent national standard. And that's what we should have. The fact of the matter is that, you know, all of our states should have a baseline standard for, you know, how registration and voting takes place. And frankly, if, you know, whatever the ID rules are. Instead, we have radically different rules. And I think that feeds into this confusion. And it makes it seem like as you come toward an election, if you're one political party or another, you argue your brief as regards election rules based on what might advantage you. And that's a lousy system. That is not a system that has as its highest priority making sure that we have high participation, high turnout elections where everybody who wants to vote can vote. And frankly, even where people aren't that interested in voting are encouraged to become part of the process.
And what I was getting from Guy, though, too, was that he thought everyone should have an ID, but forcing a voter ID law to suppress people from voting was the wrong thing to do. Dan, your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree that most everybody has an ID, and those that don't, I mean, I know there were provisions in the legislation that provided them a free ID if they needed that. The opposition to this voter ID law has been successful to some extent to say that this is suppressing voting, and that's just not the case here. It's, again, they've made a successful case that way, but that is not the case. And when I go to my local cell phone store, I've been there at least 100 times in the last 10 years, and I have to pull out an ID every stinking time. And so it's pretty common. And I know that many, many, many people have cell phones, and it's probably the case for them as well. So it's not the case that we're trying to suppress voting. We want to uphold the process, the integrity of the voting process. And an ID is a simple form of going to that way.
John, hold your thoughts. And Dan Kopanky, you too. We are going to continue talking some about the implications of this U.S. Supreme Court a decision last night that blocks Wisconsin's voter ID law. We'll also talk some about another Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage, and we'll preview the first gubernatorial debate, which is tonight, which we will carry on Wisconsin Public Radio. And whatever else you want to talk about, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll get back to our Week in Review discussion in just a moment, but first let me welcome in Cynthia Schuster, because she is here to encourage you to go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and make a pledge in support of Wisconsin Public Radio.
That's right. Last hour, we heard from 123 of you.
Wow.
Thank you so much for all that support. This hour, we hope to hear from 36, and we are well on our way toward that goal. You can be one of the people who pledge their support, their continued support to Wisconsin Public Radio at 888-202-2552 or online at WPR.org.
And we hope that you do pledge your support, because you understand that you are the most important part of Wisconsin Public Radio's budget. And we couldn't do shows like the Week in Review without listener support. So you decide how much to pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. Every single pledge is appreciated. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And as for this goal of 36 pledges, we are going to at least double that, Cynthia.
That's a ridiculous
Well, the Week in Review is quite a popular hour, and so we do expect to hear from a lot of people, and we really appreciate and value every pledge of support. And don't forget that everyone who pledges this drive will be entered in a drawing for 2 tickets on a WPR trip. The winner can choose from the Rhine River in Europe to Alaska or even France. And you can be that lucky winner, possibly, when you make your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888 888- 202-2552.
Yeah, that is going to be fun. I'll be hosting the trip to Alaska. So if you win and you choose Alaska, we'll see you there. That's going to be a good time. But it is a good time to support a service that you value. It is. It feels good to know that you are doing something that not only means a lot to you, supporting the programs that you value, but also means a lot to the entire state of Wisconsin by supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And make your pledge in the form of an ongoing monthly gift of $15 or $20 a month, whatever amount fits your budget. You can set it up with a credit card or debit card, or better yet, right from your bank account when you make a sustaining gift. And you don't, then you don't have to worry about remembering whether or not you've renewed or your membership has lapsed. It will just keep on supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. You can sign up to be a sustainer when you make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Thank you to Richard from Balsam Lake, who says, I love the Joy Cardine Show. She is simply the best. Oh, now I'm blushing. I didn't realize he was going to be complimenting me. I wanted to donate during her show to express my thanks for her wonderful programming, which I listen to every morning. Aw, Richard, thank you so much. And your pledge now does tell us that you are listening now and you value what you're hearing now, but it does go into a pot to support all of the programs on Wisconsin Public Radio. We don't have a Week in Review pot, for example. But we do appreciate, Richard, thank you very much for your pledge. How about you? This is the last day of the pledge drive, too, the last weekday of the pledge drive. So your last opportunity to show your support for the Joy Cardine Show, for the Week in Review, and for what you listen to on the weekdays. The pledge ends tomorrow, but if you're listening right now, why not pledge now? WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you very much, Cynthia. We'll talk to you later. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Week in Review. We are talking with Dan Kopanky, former Republican state senator from La Crosse, owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team, and John Nichols, associate editor of the Capital Times, Washington correspondent for The Nation, and co-author of Dollarocracy, How the Money and Media Election Complex is Destroying America. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, along with John Nichols and Dan Kopanky, and we welcome your input on the news of the week at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We've been talking about the U.S. Supreme Court decision that blocks voter ID and getting our guest's reaction to that. You mentioned earlier, John, that you hope that this comes up in tonight's debate between Governor Walker and Mary Burke. What do you want to hear from them?
Well, there's a lot I'd like to hear from both of them, but I'm not sure I'll get all of it. Look, here's the deal. Tonight's debate is a very different debate for both candidates. Mary Burke is really still in very much introducing herself. She's never been seen in a statewide debate. Scott Walker, you know, he's got a pile of statewide debates. And so they each have different goals. And what I hope is, and I doubt I'll get my hope, but my hope is that they will not simply walk through the steps that their managers and their consultants tell them to do, which is so common, where nobody answers a question. They basically just do their talking points. And one of the things is that I would love to see them both rise to that higher level. You know, elections are supposed to be events where, though we disagree passionately on issues, we have a united commitment to high turnout, high participation, real engagement. So the result of that election is a reflection of where the people are. So especially for Scott Walker, who's frankly been very aggressive in supporting the voter ID law, I hope that he will step up and say, look, you know, we had a Supreme Court ruling here. I want everybody to know in Wisconsin, it's going to be easy to vote. It's going to be a normal election. Come on out. And I would hope that Mary Burke would back him up on that. You know, wouldn't it be wonderful? And I know I'm not trying to be naive here, but wouldn't it be wonderful if we return to those days of Gaylord Nelson and Mel Laird, you know, who disagreed on every issue and yet on all sorts of civic things would stand up and back each other up and say, our election process matters more than our, you know, petty politics. Now, that's what I'd like to see. The one thing that I will emphasize is that what I would like to see most of all, there are actually two things. Number one, I'd like to see all the candidates on the ballot in the debate. It disappoints me that this is a two-candidate debate when you have other candidates on. Qualifying for the ballot should get you at least into the first debate. Secondly, I'd like to see a lot more debates. It is disappointing to me in the state of Wisconsin that we're going to have two debates for the governorship of this state in two locations, the Milwaukee area and over in western Wisconsin. We should have a good five or six more. It is absurd to limit a gubernatorial election to two debates.
Dan, your thoughts?
Well, I'm looking forward to the debate tonight for several reasons. First off, we've seen already the TV ads and the radio ads and heard the radio ads, and I'm looking forward to hearing, you know, directly from the candidates as they speak to their voters out here in Wisconsin. I believe strongly that the voter ID issue will be a topic tonight, and I think that John said it very well. I think we need to move on, and we're not going to challenge the court here. They've spoken, so let's move on. Let's get the election. Let's get the facts. Let's get where we stand on the issues out there in front of the people, and then let the people decide. And that's why I enjoy debates, because it is face-to-face. It's one against the other for the audience, the voters. And I think we're going to hear about a lot of things, but, you know, what I'm really looking forward to is again, where they stand on the issues. I know that Act 10 is going to come up. Where would Mary stand on that, Mary Burke? What has happened since, you know, why did we go into Act 10? Why did we go into that legislation and, you know, and the results of? I really want that out here. And also the way Wisconsin is progressing, when you look at our state and compare it to some of the other states, I know the jobs thing is certainly going to be out there, the number that the governor put out there. But where we stand, what does our financial checkbook look like here in Wisconsin? And no one can deny that it's better off today than it was 4 years ago.
We will be carrying that debate tonight at 7 on Wisconsin Public Radio. There's another debate next Friday that we will also be broadcasting live. We'll recap what is said at the debate during our state capitol report on Monday between 7 and 8. Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson will be among the questioners at tonight's debate, and he'll have a front row seat and report back on Monday morning on the state capitol report. We can talk a little bit more about other issues that you anticipate coming up or that you want to come up in tonight's debate in just a moment. But let's talk about some other issues in the news this week and related election news. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says that the director of the Government Accountability Board, Kevin Kennedy, must go. Voss says that GAB is dysfunctional, unresponsive, and totally undemocratic. Governor Walker has not said whether he shares that sentiment. Dan, do you have any problems with Kevin Kennedy or the Government Accountability Board?
I wouldn't say I have problems, but I think that maybe a look into their operation could result in some changes being made, and I'm not advocating that Kevin Kennedy be one of those changes, as Robin Voss is, but I've had some dealings with them, and you know, they were, I thought, fair to me in some respects, in some respects not. So again, I think that taking a look at the operations of the GAB is in order. I mean, it was created by the legislature. I think the legislature should just take a look to ensure themselves and the residents of the state that indeed it is running as it should.
Mm-hmm. And John, what do you think of that?
Look, I have a huge problem with how this is playing out, because we've got a situation developing where politicians are essentially telling the GAB how it should operate, who should be there, literally personalizing it to an intense level. And, you know, that is an awfully lot like a baseball game where you're telling the umpire, you know, what he should do, who he should be. My problem with the GAB, and I have a lot of problems with the GAB, my problem with the GAB is that it is not strong enough. It is not an authoritative voice for nonpartisan management of elections in Wisconsin that comes down strong and basically slaps down any politician that tries to game the system. I am exceptionally disappointed by the weakness of the GAB at many, many turns. And that is very different than what Robin Voss is saying. Robin Voss seems to be saying he wants a GAB that basically jumps as high as he says. And that's the problem. And I do think that as we, I think it's fine to have an exploration of the GAB. So my argument would be this, one of two things. Number one, either you significantly strengthen the GAB and you make it a real election authority that has the respect and the strength to run fair and decent elections, or you get rid of it and you put the powers back with the Secretary of State, as is the case in more than 40 states across this country, where you have an elected and accountable official running elections. But what we can't have is this middle ground where the GAB becomes sort of a political plaything and is pressured and pushed, because you cannot tell me it doesn't have an effect when the Speaker of the State Assembly is personally pointing at and saying, you know, I'm going to take that person out. I mean, that is unhealthy in an electoral process. It fosters disrespect and disregard for the process. And so we have to do something. But I don't think that Robin Voss has the cure here. I think actually what Robin Voss is illustrating is the fundamental problem with too weak a GAB at this point.
Governor Walker says the fight against gay marriage is over in Wisconsin. The U.S. Supreme Court turned away appeals from five states seeking to prohibit same-sex marriage, including Wisconsin. Walker says gay marriage is now the law of the land and the state will go forward enacting it. Let's start with Dan Kopanky. Your reaction to the U.S. Supreme Court, essentially legalizing gay marriage in Wisconsin.
Well, I have to agree with the comments that the governor made. I mean, how are you going to fight the Supreme Court? I voted for the amendment a few years ago, and many Wisconsinites did. I think it was close to 60%, if I recall correctly. So, you know, because of that, the legislature and the governor moved forward with the amendment, and now the Supreme Court has cut it down. So I think that those of us who were in favor of that amendment did what we did, and the Supreme Court has said no, so we have to abide by that.
Mm-hmm. Your reaction, John?
Look, I passionately opposed putting discriminatory language into the Wisconsin Constitution. That language was at odds with the core contents of the Constitution. It was wrong. The people who played that political game back in 2006 to amend our Constitution for the first time to include discrimination against a group of people were wrong. It was a bad thing to do. I'm delighted that it has been moved away, that it has effectively been put in the dustbin of history. I do think it is important to understand that good people have evolved on this issue and have moved and actually still have stands all over the place. And that's fine. You know, I understand people debate on it. What frustrates me a little bit is the way that the governor has sort of tried to have this issue both ways. He has, for the better part of two decades, been an advocate for discrimination, an advocate for saying some people can't marry because I don't want them to marry. And he supported the appeals, and yet at the same time, he would come forward and say, this isn't really my issue. And I'm, now it's over. The fact of the matter is that I do think we should at times hold politicians to account. And if they're really wrong, we ought to note that. And Scott Walker has been really wrong on this issue for a long, long time. I know he's probably running for president. I know he wants to, kind of soften his image a little bit, especially in this election cycle. But I was deeply disappointed in his position on this issue. And frankly, I was deeply disappointed in the aggressiveness of the appeals when it was so very, very clear that this just wasn't going to happen, that ultimately the courts were going to say this should not stand.
Mary Burke, a Democratic gubernatorial challenger, said that Governor Walker was on the wrong side of history. Dan Kopanky, on this issue, what about... he on the wrong side of history, and was it a waste of taxpayer dollars to try to appeal this?
Well, not in my opinion, and also, again, going back to the voters in Wisconsin and how they overwhelmingly, in a vote in Wisconsin, 60-40 pretty much, voted for this. So, legislature, again, acted because of that. But there are some of us who believe on religious grounds that marriage is a man and a woman. Now, that comes from the Bible. The Bible also says that, we shouldn't steal and we shouldn't swear and we shouldn't look at our neighbor's wife, and all of those things, which are sins as well. So I'm not judging anybody on this. You know, we all have our faults, we all have our sins, and I'm right there with everybody. So it's not a judgment thing. It's that we're trying the same thing with abortion. I disagree totally with 1973 decision, but it's the law of the land. We must abide by it. It doesn't mean we have to agree with it.
Let me take a call from Carol in Oak Creek. Hello, Carol.
Hi, thank you. I'm thrilled that we finally have gay marriage in Wisconsin. I've been with my partner for 30 years. I can finally get married. It just shows that opponents of gay marriage never have the facts to back up their views. For example, in the country of Denmark, they've had gay marriage for 25 years. Massachusetts, the first state to pass same-sex marriage on the books 10 years ago. During all this time, none of the fears of the straight community has come true. So the facts will always trump the lies. It may take time, but I think we'll run in all 50 states. Thank goodness.
Do you see that day coming?
Oh, yeah, very quickly. In fact, you know, and unfortunately it's coming from the courts. I wish it was coming from our political leaders. You know, one of the things is that we ought to hold our elected leaders to account. They're supposed to lead. That's the core of that word, leader. And in fact, we have too many of them who play politics with this issue. I think it is absolutely true that we knew decades ago it was time to remove these barriers. And I understand Dan's views. And I, as a believer myself, you know, I you know, understand the desire sometimes to have a society created in the reflection of our religious views. But that's not how America was founded. America was founed to be a pluralistic society where people could have different religious views, and also where people sometimes had to accept things in law and in the reality of structures of society that weren't where they were at. And I think our caller sums it up very, very well. For all of the expressions of concern, the truth of the matter is I was on the steps of the Dane County Courthouse for that brief period where people were marrying back a couple months ago. And I don't know if I've ever seen, you know, a public expression that was as beautiful as that. We saw children coming with flowers. And I asked some of the kids, you know, who are the flowers for? Do you have an aunt getting married or a sister or somebody like that? And they said, no, we went and got flowers and we're going to give them to everybody who's in love. The fact of the matter is our children are so much wiser than we are on this. And they realize that trying to pass laws that discriminate against people based on who they love is just a bad, bad policy.
Further thoughts on this, Dan?
Well, I'm just, again, there's not hate here. It's just a difference of opinion. And again, like I stated, we believe on religious grounds that marriage is a man and a woman. Doesn't mean we dislike these people. We hate these people. It's nothing there. We have to be tolerant of all of us because we were all put on this earth. We are all God's children. And so we have to be tolerant. But it doesn't mean that we have to agree, but we have to be respectful.
And can I just throw in on Dan? I've known Dan for a long time. I've watched him. I don't think anybody should suggest that this is hate. I'd really, you know, there are people that bring hate to this debate. But the fact of the matter is what Dan just said is in fact, a real expression of where a lot of people are. And frankly, this is another of those issues where we ought to be moving forward, recognizing this is where we're at and we're going to live in a pluralistic society. And, you know, it's going to work.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with John Nichols and Dan Kopanky about the top news stories of the week. This is our week in review. It will continue in just a moment. We'll talk about other top stories of the week. But first, we have an update from Pledge Central. Cynthia Schuster is joining us for just a couple of minutes. I think we're doing all right this hour,
Cynthia.
We've
got some good news. We have just surpassed the 36 pledge goal, although I think you guys set, what, 100?
We doubled it.
No, okay.
The paltry and disappointing goal, which must be surpassed massively.
So let's see how far we can take it. You can make your pledge of support at 888 202 2552 or pledge online at WPR.org.
Yeah, I doubled the goal. So my goal is that we will make 75. How's that?
That sounds good.
It's even more than doubling the goal because you love the Week in Review, because you appreciate hearing a civil discussion about the issues of the day from guests from many different perspectives. And you love guests like John Nichols and Dan Kopanky and the many other regulars that we have talking with you about these issues. So pledge any amount. Maybe it's $50. Maybe it's $50 a month. You decide how much to pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you might even consider $100 or $200 a month. That would put you in the 9XM leadership circle. People who donate $1,200 a year or more become members of the 9XM leadership circle. So that comes down to less than $8 a day when you break it apart. And it makes the talk, the news, music, and entertainment that you count on at WPR possible. You can give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And did we mention that we are entering every pledger's name into a hat and making a drawing, and the winner will choose between three WPR trips. There's a trip to the Rhine River, there's a trip to France, and there's a trip to Alaska, and I'll be hosting that one. So any pledge during this drive, you are entered into this drawing for your choice of three trips if you're the winner. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And probably the best reason to pledge is that this is the last weekday of the pledge drive.
That's right. Get your pledge in now, especially if you're a fan of the Week in Review. You tune in every Friday at 8 o'clock to get a roundup of the week's top headlines, get a few perspectives on the news, and maybe even you call into the conversation and be a part of the discussion as well. Keep this program going strong by pledging your support at 888-202-2552 and online at WPR.org.
Thanks very much, Cynthia. We will hope to hear good news from you at the end of the hour as well. I'm Joy Cardine. We'll get back to our Week in Review discussion in just a moment. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to be talking with Dan Kopanky, a former Republican state senator and the owner of the La Crosse Loggers baseball team, and John Nichols, associate editor of the Capital Times, Washington correspondent for The Nation, co-author of Dollarocracy, How the Money and Media Election Complex is Destroying America. We also welcome your thoughts, the topics that happened in the news this week that you want to talk about, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Lots of other things have happened in the news this week, but let me ask you, Dan Kopanky, first, just your thoughts on how important tonight's debate is going to be in the race for governor.
Well, it's very important, as John alluded to, especially for Mary Burke, who wants to get her name, ID, and face in front of so many people, which will happen tonight. I think it's very important for her in that respect, and Governor Walker's respect. I think that he needs to get, again, the message out of what's been done in 4 years in Wisconsin, where we need to go, are we on that path? And how are we going to get there? I think that's what the governor's message needs to be, and that's Mary needs to, again, get her views out there and have people recognize and understand where she's coming from, and that'll make for a great debate, and as we point towards November 4th.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, John?
Well, I tend to share Dan's view. One of the things I hope is that the debate does not get limited to the jobs fight, because I think the jobs fight's the most important issue, without a question. And both these candidates are going to be so well trained to offer their arguments and their talking points on this that they'll go, the second the word jobs is even, if you just say a word that starts with J, you're going to get the download. And I hope that this debate gets pushed into some of the other areas where these candidates have fundamental and deep differences. Governor Walker's tried to muddy some of that recently with an ad that makes him seem very moderate on the issue of reproductive rights. I hope that is pushed and that they really do clearly identify where they're at. I hope that they clearly identify where they are at on some of these democracy issues, voting rights, voter ID, early voting. There's been a real battle over that in Wisconsin. I hope they get into the mine issue and talk in real fundamental ways about environmental differences between these candidates. And I hope, and this is a passion based on where I come from, I hope that they have a good discussion about rural Wisconsin, and especially perhaps about what a voucher program, vouchers on public education, might do to rural schools, because these are big, big issues, and the next governor is going to have to deal with a lot. I want those distinctions to be made absolutely clear. And finally, I would hope that the host will ask each of these candidates whether they plan to run for president in 2016.
And what do you think Governor Walker will say to that, Dan Kopanky?
I think he'll say we're concentrating on making Wisconsin a better place to live and raise a family and grow our economy and our jobs. I think that'll be his answer.
And then I hope there's a follow-up question.
But certainly that's out there. He has the national recognition. He has a tremendous ability to raise funds nationally. And so it's natural that that question would come up, and I think he's going to certainly dodge it. I don't know if it's certainly maybe on the minds of many of his people that work with him, but I think the concentration of Governor Walker is to win on November 4th.
Stephen Hillsdale joins us. Hi, Steve.
Yes, hello. With all due respect, I'm a trucker, and I get around the country, but we have a real leader as a governor now. He believes in our Constitution, the United States of America, our liberties, our freedoms. He's not like these liberals that condone homosexuality and abortion that go against we, the people's will, regardless how we vote. They're not leaders. They're fools. They think they're going to get one over on we, the people, and ignore us and our vote against homosexuality and abortion and all that. In the long run, they won't win.
All right. Thanks very much, Steve. He wanted to talk about Governor Walker being a true leader and keeping his promises. I guess any reaction, John, to that?
That doesn't bother me at all. I think I think where he's coming from is an important expression of an element of this race. Again, I think that Governor Walker, who I've known for many, many years, and who frankly comes across very, very well in a lot of presentations, I fear that Governor Walker sends very different signals to different communities, a kind of a broad, relatively moderate-sounding message for the state of Wisconsin. But then, as this caller emphasizes, very, very conservative on social issues, reproductive rights, marriage equality. And I don't think it's wrong to clarify that. So I welcome the caller. And I may disagree with some of the caller's sentiments, but I don't like it when voters are given sort of a gray choice, when in reality, the choice in Wisconsin this year is incredibly stark. Mary Burke is for a significant increase in the minimum wage. Scott Walker this week said that a $7.25 an hour minimum wage, or his agency said a $7.25 minimum wage is a living wage. I think that's fundamentally wrong, but that's a real distinction.
Yeah, well, a brief response to the minimum wage issue, Dan?
Well, yeah, I don't know if I didn't hear that he said it was a livable wage, but
well, they had a request from a group of people making $7.25 an hour that the governor review it and take action under Wisconsin law to raise the wage, and the response back was that the $7.25 did not they didn't need to raise it; it was a livable wage.
Well, again. I don't think the minimum wage was ever meant to be the end all, that this is where you are. It's a starting wage. In my business, we hire many 15 and 16 year old young adults, and it's their first job, and they start at $7.25, and if they work hard, they end up with $8.50 or $9 an hour at 16 or 15 years old. I think that's where the minimum wage comes in. It's in level, it's entry jobs, and people work hard and they move way beyond that, and that really is the goal.
I'm Joy Cardine with Dan Kopanky and John Nichols. We have a few more minutes during this edition of The Week in Review to talk about the issues making news this week. But I do want to remind you, because this is the last weekday of our pledge drive, our fall pledge drive, that we are still looking to make a 70 pledge goal during this hour. It's my new and improved goal, but we are at 57 right now, and I think that we can make this 70 goal, a pledge goal. If you pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Pledge any amount because you understand that this is listener-supported radio and we depend on you to bring you programs like The Week in Review. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. All right, back to politics. What did we had? Michelle Obama, First Lady Michelle Obama was in Madison this week. She was in Milwaukee last week to appear with Mary Burke. Michelle Obama encouraged young people to vote for Burke because she says she'll fight to make college more affordable and raise the minimum wage. She also said if they show up to vote, Governor Walker can be defeated. John Nichols, what kind of lift do you think Mary Burke got from this visit from the First Lady?
Well, I think it fits into a pattern of organizing, pattern of mobilization. There's clearly a big effort on the part of Mary Burke's campaign to get young people, college students out, and that's why she came to Madison. That was the core theme. I'll be very blunt with you. I think that the Burke campaign has had a lot of people come to Madison and Milwaukee. I think they have Elizabeth Warren coming on Saturday. They need to get some folks out to La Crosse.
Amen.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, I know that the Loggers aren't still playing, but I think the stadium's open and ready for use. But I can't emphasize this. Well, I think that Michelle Obama, I was at the event. I thought she gave a terrific speech. I thought Mary Burke came across very well. But I do think that we should all be very careful about Madison and Milwaukee-centric campaigning. And when I look at the polls, what it does strike me is everybody, all these famous folks ought to be getting out to La Crosse and Eau Claire and maybe even Viroqua, because the fact of the matter is I think this election is going to be decided in western and northern Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, your thoughts on First Lady Michelle Obama and maybe Dan Kopenke, who do you want to see come to Wisconsin to campaign for Governor Walker?
Well, Chris Christie has campaigned for Governor Walker. We have, you know, our own Paul Ryan has been making the rounds, I know that, Senator Ron Johnson. Those people are very important, and I'm glad they're doing it. I think it's significant that the president is not making the rounds this year, whether it be to Wisconsin or the other 49 states, and there's good reason for that. Michelle is a good candidate, and to be helpful to Mary Burke, I'm sure. But John says it very well. I mean, for many, many years, we cry over here in this part of the country that, you know, we're part of Wisconsin, too. And come on over here and see what we're up to and see what we're all about over here and listen to our concerns for the state. So very, very well said, John. Viroqua is a great, great little town, city not far from here, and Prairie du Chien and Eau Claire and Hudson and all over. It's all part of Wisconsin, and they should be visible in these areas as well.
Well, you know, I wish we have other issues and not enough time to cover them all. Let me just ask you, John Nichols, first, as briefly as you can. What are you going to be looking for as the final weeks before the November election?
Well, it goes off what we were just talking about. This seems to be a statewide campaign. The fact of the matter is that both parties have fallen into a terrible trap of trying to, you know, maximize their base and make sure that everybody in their areas where they are strong turns out. The problem with that is that we really do have swing areas in Wisconsin, counties that can go both ways. And I think we should all take a little lesson from Tammy Baldwin when she ran for the U.S. Senate in 2012. A lot of people wrote her off. And then when you look at the map, she carried the majority of Wisconsin counties. One of the reasons she did was, to the very end of her campaign, she did a true statewide campaign. Now, I think that everybody ought to be conscious of that. I want to see a lot more pictures out of La Crosse and Eau Claire and Rhinelander and Viroqua and Hudson than out of Milwaukee and Madison.
And what are you going to be hoping for, looking for, Dan?
Well, in defense of the governor, he has been to La Crosse I don't know how many times in 4 years. He's been here a lot. And again, I'm just looking for a clear message, a clear distinction between these two candidates, and that the public is able to discern that and vote accordingly.
Dan Kopenke and John Nichols, thank you for being here. We will be following up on tonight's debate on our State Capitol Report Monday between 7 and 8. You can watch the debate tonight at 7 here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Did I say watch? You can hear it on Wisconsin Public Radio. You can watch it. You can watch it on Wisconsin Public Television. Joining me for just this last minute or so on the show, the last minute of our fall membership drive, is Cynthia Schuster. Cynthia, we are fast approaching our new and improved goal.
That's right. Looks like we just need six more people to pledge in order for us to double what had been established as our goal this hour. We were looking for 36 pledges. Now we've upped it actually to 75, so a little bit more than doubled. Make your pledge of support at 888-202-2552 or online at WPR.org.
Yeah, thanks so much if you've already supported Wisconsin Public Radio, if you're an ongoing member right now. We need to hear from you if you have yet to make that pledge this week. Pledge any amount and it will help pay for Wisconsin Public Radio programming that you value. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's your last chance to support the Week in Review during this pledge drive. Show your appreciation for this program, which comes to you every week at this time at 888-202-2552 and online at WPR.org.
Five more pledges to go. We'll make that goal, and we can do it with your help. Remember, every single pledge is eligible for that drawing for a WPR trip, so that's a little added bonus. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks so much for your support.